welcome in. Glad you're along for the ride on a Tuesday, and thank you for joining us. Our 2 o'clock start here. We will be on from 2 to 4 on Tuesdays, not Thursdays, 2 to 4, on Tuesdays throughout the balance of football season, then back to our normal spot. But we'll hand it off to Jaguars Happy Hour. Urban Meyer's show will now be on Tuesdays, and all that comes up on the radio station, so we're glad you're with us on 1010XL and, of course, 92.5 FM. What a game last night. How good was that game? I was tired. I wanted to go to bed. It was I want to go to bed game, but I couldn't stop watching it. Did you stay up?
I did not.
You did not. Oh my goodness! Yeah. You watched it all right?
Watched the whole thing.
I saw every second too. Okay. It was great.
Hayes's girlfriend.
It was not great.
Why not?
Well, because Hayes's girlfriend Jean is from Baltimore.
That's right.
And a diehard.
Diehard Ravens fan.
And so what was the threat? What happened on the threat?
I have been told that if they ever lose again while we're watching a game, I will be finding a new place to live.
And this happened during the break in the show.
So then I quickly reminded her that they play the Chiefs next.
Right.
So I may be in real trouble.
Well, and always the always helpful part of the team, Lauren Brooks, immediately offered to loan you a tent.
Yes.
Which I thought was kind.
I've got a tent. Yeah. I've got an air mattress. Yeah. You're welcome to borrow. There will not be bears in your backyard if you need to.
Yeah. Just so you know, if I had a tent, which I don't.
Right.
Just if
just if I had a tent, I would bring it to your house and sit under it and watch you sleep on the grass. Yeah. Okay. You wouldn't be under it. I just would be there to watch you.
Right. And shockingly, I don't own a tent.
Also, shocking. That's why I felt I had to step up to the plate because I knew neither of you owned it.
Yeah, it was a great game, but it was a tough game. I mean, it was an amazing game.
Yeah,
I give the Raiders a lot of credit. Because it certainly looked like on that pick in the end zone that it would be the Ravens' night, and then Lamar Jackson couldn't get it done, and then Vegas took advantage. So unbelievable game. And
for people that didn't see it, let me tell you how dramatic it was. Regulations back and forth. It looks like it's over. Justin Tucker, who last missed a field goal when he was in Pop Warner. Best kicker of all time.
Isn't that stat amazing that he's made like 48 straight in the fourth quarter now?
He's the best kicker of all time.
He is.
So
ice in his veins.
So he makes it. And so, okay. And so the game's over because they're out of time. And one time, no timeouts, blah, 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 blah. Suddenly the ghost of Ken Stabler and Dave Casper lead him right down the field. And then George Blanda comes on and kicks whatever that field goal was.
54, I think.
Carlson bombs a 54-yarder. Now we're over. Then the overtime was even crazier.
Yeah.
For people that missed the overtime, the Raiders have the ball first, go down and score the winning touchdown. Except they didn't. It was the review saw that the guy was down at the half yard line.
Right.
Okay. So you see, quarterback sneak, game's over.
Carr's like hugging up the opponent. Like they've started. The teams have started hugging each other and telling each other good game.
I'm surprised they didn't trade jerseys.
Yeah.
They had done everything but the jersey trade. So the game's over. But it's not. So they get the ball back on the half-yard line. Quarterback sneak, nothing. Well, then all of a sudden, there's a false start. So now first and goal at the half-yard line is third and goal or whatever from the 6. Carr throws an interception, a tipped interception.
It wasn't his fault.
Yeah, right. It was right in the guy's hands. Yeah. Willie Sneed should have caught it. But it's still an interception.
Right.
So you're thinking, wow, they were about to upset the Ravens. They had them beat. They're going to beat the Ravens. And then they give the game back to the Ravens, who promptly fumbled it right back to the Raiders. And then the touchdown play was the greatest. They had one more play, run it to get it in field goal position, kick the field goal. And then Carr just drops back off his back foot and throws one up for grabs. You saw the play, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the defensive back said they're going to run it.
Yeah.
Oh, screw it. They didn't. You know, I mean, he quit running.
It almost
was bizarre.
It was. It almost made me wonder if Gruden baited the Ravens a little bit on that because he sends out the kicking. It's second down.
Right. Correct.
And he sends out the kicking unit, but he sends them in late. They end up getting a delay of game. So he sends the offense back on the field. And so you're kind of thinking, okay, well, he's just trying to get the 5 yards back on the ground, and then they're going to kick it again. Nope. And just a beautiful play call. So it almost made me wonder if there was a little bit of genius in that mistake, if that was somewhat done by design, because the Ravens clearly were expecting a run.
Right.
I mean, you almost never – and it's hard to fool Baltimore. But I mean, they got toasted. I mean, all Carr had to do was just get it in the vicinity of Jones, and it was going to be a touchdown because I mean the closest Ravens defender just stopped running because he knew he was so badly beaten.
Yeah. So what a bizarre finish. Last night.
Great crowd, too.
Is it possible that some of the quarterbacks that we've written off are actually good, like Derek Carr, like Teddy Bridgewater?
I thought about that same thing. Yeah, it is possible, and I thought the same thing you did. I really thought about Carr. I mean, Carr, we had – Bridgewater, we always had in kind of that journeyman, in the right situation, will be okay. But we all – I'm terribly guilty of thinking Carr wasn't very good. Then he had good numbers last year, but I've still thought – I'm convinced myself he's not very good. And he was pretty good last night. Now he was pretty good last night. He's feisty guy. You know, you can tell he's feisty guy. He's I told you so guy. But that's okay. I think he's a pretty good player. So,
are we all that at some point in time though?
Yes. I will tell you this: the football season is off to a great start. I mean, the dramatic games in college and pro football. I mean, the Bucks Cowboys game, that FSU Notre Dame game, and the college game. These games, we are off to a great start in college football and NFL football. I mean, that NFL game last night was fantastic.
Jack, it's your turn.
Yeah, that's right. But, I mean, last night was one of those games that I was tired and I wanted to go to bed, and I stayed up, and then I was too wired to go to bed. It was some game, man. That was really – I tweeted what a game, and I thought, how many times have I tweeted that already this year? You know, I mean, it's September 14th. I've got way more what a game tweets under my belt by September 14th than we've ever had. It's that kind of a start.
You're going to lose a lot more sleep over the next few months.
I guess so. So a lot of things to talk about today on the program. We've got Greg. Oh, we're here only till 4:00. Greg McGarrity comes in from the Gator Bowl. He'll be here at 2:40. Danny Thompson comes in at 3:20. We'll talk Jags, Gators, and Noles. I got a lot of thoughts to get to about all of them. Let's start with the Jaguars. That's how we'll kick off the program. It's 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
You know, I'm trying to find the bright spots, and the bright spots are that they had pretty good defense line, and our guys hung in there. We expect them to play better consistently throughout the whole game, but you know, we're not going to be a 51. Better not be a 51 drop back times a game.
It's a Nimnik Tuesday on the Frangie Show. Nimnik, your friends in the car business since 1941.
A lot to get to here on a Nimnik Tuesday. Thanks to my friends at the Nimnik Family of Dealerships. Billy Nimnik, Lee Nimnik, all my friends at Nimnik. Guys, they do a terrific job. The Nimnik Family of Dealerships, always a Nimnik Tuesday around here. All right, let's get to Urban. Let's start with Urban. That was Urban Meyer talking about not wanting to throw the ball 51 times. I don't blame him. I think you'll see that change a little. A lot of Urban conversation in the air. One guy writes that he's not happy. Another guy writes that his coaches aren't happy. What do you make of that, Hayes? I sometimes think you just have to kind of get through the muck, whether it's true, untrue, whatever. I think everybody's got to just kind of settle down. It's a long year. The one thing Urban said in his presser afterwards, he said, everyone's telling me this thing's a marathon, not a sprint. Any trouble on the horizon, or does Urban just need to get through these first couple weeks and then coach football?
Yeah, I'm concerned. Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned. There were things that I saw in training camp that I thought were concerning. You know, I voiced a lot of it, and they weren't ready to play on Sunday.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to lose like 24-20. The Texans just out-athleted you one too many times and you lose a game. You go on the road, lose a game in week one. It'd be very disappointing, but that happens. To hand them the game on a silver platter, which is what the Jaguars did, it makes me incredibly concerned because I don't remember Urban Meyer ever in college not having his team ready to play. They might have gotten beat, but I don't remember operationally an Urban Meyer team ever having this much trouble. And these are professional athletes that have been playing football a lot longer than amateurs. So, I don't know in terms of the in-house, you know, disgruntled like that. I have no clue about that.
What you see on the field.
But, and we know he coaches hard. I mean, he coaches his staff hard. He's told us that. He's told us that from the beginning, that he doesn't like to put a lot of blame on players.
Right.
He puts the blame on coaches when players don't perform. I think it's at a point where they do need to stick together. I think they've got the right locker room, you know, to stick together from, you know, you look at you know, the Josh Allens and Trevor Lawrences and things like that. I don't think there's going to be a lot of guys that check out. But, yeah, I'm incredibly concerned because I think now you're staring at 0-4 very easily.
You're not concerned, from what I'm hearing you say, you're not concerned that this is a disaster and it's going to get blown up and Urban's going to leave and the world's going to come. You're concerned that...
Well, I'm not dismissing that either. Okay. But because I don't know how he'll react if this is a 3-14.
Yeah.
And I've only seen 60 minutes. Like I said yesterday, I've only seen 5.8% of the picture of what this season will be. They've played one game out of 17. I've seen 5.8% of the season. So certainly it could drastically change. And I hope that come Sunday around 4:30, I feel a whole lot better.
Right.
But based on what I have seen since they took the field July 27th to where we are now, I have seen way more things that concern me than make me feel good about things. Really, the only thing I feel good about is I really do believe Trevor Lawrence is going to be a superstar.
I think the organization is at a place where they definitely need the team to look organized on Sunday. Even if they lose, if the team looks disorganized again, if there's those types of penalties and drops again, then I think that chatter is going to get louder, even though it's only game two. But it's happening because you've got a coach who's been extremely successful everywhere and is so detail-oriented, so it doesn't seem possible that he could have his team show up like that in the first week. That looked like a team that had played three road games in a row, and this was an early kick, and they looked flat. Like, that's what they looked like. Not the first week. But I don't think Shad Khan is freaking out by any means. But if you continue to see those, I mean, there were seven captains' names named last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever. Where was the leadership from those guys? I didn't see anybody, and I wasn't at the game, so y'all can correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't see anybody on the sidelines on TV firing each other up. People would go up to Trevor after he'd throw the pick, sure. But I didn't see the leadership from those captains that I expected to see. And so at this point in time, I guarantee that Urban Meyer is, having some very harsh conversations with his coaches, like the wide receivers coach and the safeties coach and things like that. And I guarantee it'll look better on Sunday.
Yeah, I will say this. In terms of the internal stuff, it is what it is. I'm not connected enough to know, I suppose. I think I got thinking about this a lot because Urban's name's in the SC thing. And one guy says he's not happy. And another guy says he's making his coaches and players unhappy. And we've read it all. If you got the internet, you've read it all. If you got the internet and you pay attention to the Jaguars, you've read it all. I think there was a lot of newness here, man. You got a guy that's never coached in the NFL. Guy that hasn't coached anywhere for the last year or two, but hasn't coached in the NFL. Bringing in a handful of coaches who have never coached in the NFL. Charlie Strong, Chris Ash, Tosh Lapoy. I don't think any of them, those guys have been NFL coaches. Plus, and combine them with a lot of NFL coaches who have coached in the NFL. And now the NFL veteran coaches and the college veteran coaches are having to work together. Urban's got a different style. Hayes, we talked about it. Fernando calling
Lovo.
Out. I'm sorry?
Lovo.
Yeah, awesome. Fernando Lovo calling out the what's the next station and Urban talking to the team a long time, talking to the team more than most NFL coaches do. Most NFL stuff is systematic. You plan this, you go to this. You go to this, you go to this. You plan this, you go to this, you go to this. Urban's more like a college coach. He's going to talk to the team until he thinks the talking's complete. And if you change the schedule a little bit because you're not done getting your message across, then you change the schedule. NFL coaches don't change schedules. So I think it's all different. And they got to figure out, and the pro coaches have to figure out the college, and the Urban's got to figure. So I think all of that. I think it quiets a little bit when they win a game. And I'll say what I've said all along. I think the ultimate answer to that is number 16. To your point a minute ago, that's what nobody debates, is that 16 is good. So I don't think Urban's going anywhere. I do think they're going to have to filter through it a little bit. He didn't look happy in the preseason, some. We all saw that. The football team, it was not a good performance by any stretch. Even positive spin guy, which is me, couldn't positively spin that game. It looked unorganized, looked sloppy. Looked out coached, looked out played. So even positive spin guy couldn't change that one. So we'll see. I this is a very important game this week for them. It's a critically important game for them this week. It's as important as any game I've seen in a long time because you might not win the game. Other teams have started 0-2, but you don't want to be 0-2 and look as dysfunctional as even Urban admitted they looked. That's what you don't want. 0-2, but play a lot better. it's a long year. No one's expecting you to go to the Super Bowl. But, I mean, I could see them start 0-4 and all these games people thought they might win and then win something you're not supposed to win. But you do what you don't want to do in week two is be an ugly loss following the ugly loss, right? You know what I mean? You can play well and lose the game, but you don't want ugly loss to follow ugly loss. So it's an important week. For all those reasons, it's an important week to look way more functional. Your first time playing a real game in front of your fans, really only the second time you've been in front of your fans. You know, this is an important game. I mean, it's an important week to play well. It's an important week. I don't want to say it's not important to win. Of course it is. But if you say it's critical to win and you lose, then the sky's falling. I don't think the sky's falling, but they've got to be better than they were. It's got to feel better than it did. Does that make sense? It's got to feel better.
It's got to feel better, and that's the thing. I agree with people that say, well, I think the drops will be corrected, and my guess is from an operational standpoint, you know, they'll be better. And I would agree on both those points. But to me, that doesn't mean that some other issues don't pop up that weren't necessarily issues against the Texans. You know, do we see a different kind of mistake now? In large quantities that drastically affects their ability to win the game. Like, I mean, Urban Meyer's done a lot of great things in his career at the college level. He has no trust with me at the NFL level. I mean, I'm hoping that he'll be fantastic, but there's no political capital that he has at this level. So until I see evidence that he can do it at this level, it's hard not to question it based on what I've seen. And again, I have to keep reminding myself, Hayes, you've only seen less than 6% of this work of art that Urban Meyer is creating. So I have to keep reminding myself that. And they may go and beat Denver, and then it's going to be a whole different feeling. But I'm getting to the point where what he's done in college no longer concerns me. Because now I've seen him running an NFL team now for almost 2 months, and I've seen one game, and I've seen a couple preseason games where I wasn't thrilled with what was out there. And, you know, so now I think you need to start seeing some real signs of growth. My fear is they'll clean up the stuff that went wrong against the Texans, and as soon as they plug those holes in the dam, then three other holes will open up that weren't necessarily issues in Houston.
Yeah, I think for fans who went to the first preseason game against the Browns and thought, oh no, this is a disaster, here we go again, and then watched the first game this past Sunday, and they were saying it's the same old Jags, I think they have every right to say that for the here and now. Yes, we have a new coach, yes, we have a new quarterback, but it sure seems like the dearth of talent and all the different issues that can happen repeated themselves all over again. And so can Trevor Lawrence elevate those around him to the degree that he's going to have to? I think that's a big question. And then at what point do you start to see that wear and tear on Trevor?
I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be so good that he's going to win some games. He's going to put the team on his back and win a few games. You can't carry a season that way, though. That's the thing. You can't go, he's not going to turn a 3-win season into a 12-win season. He could possibly turn a 4-win season into a 6-win season. And I say so. So it's a very interesting dynamic to see where this whole thing goes.
Do you feel, by the way, worse today than you did Sunday after calling the game and after you leaving the press box? Do you feel worse today or no?
Same. Okay. I was very surprised after the game that they were bad in that many areas. Nah, I don't feel any different now. I feel it was a they got to figure it out. And again, to suggest that there's not some clunkiness in the operation would be disingenuous. There is. There's some clunkiness in getting through a new staff, a combined college and pro guy, a guy that's never done this before, a rookie quarterback who's never been in the league before. There was going to be some of that. I'll say what I said to start the program yesterday, Lauren. I'm not surprised they lost a game. They're going to lose some games. They're 1-15 last year. You don't go from 1-15 to winning all your games. I'm not surprised they lost it. Everybody else thought they were going to beat that Texans. You guys heard me. I was not convinced they were beating the Texans. I picked them, but I was never convinced they were winning that game. So I'm not surprised they lost the game. I am surprised at holding and false starts and dropped passes and all of it. I'm surprised at all. Even Trevor, I'm surprised he made two or three choices that he would tell you he doesn't ever make, you know. So I think all of it, I think I was surprised that it all went that badly. I had a hard time coming out of that game finding positives, and I'm positive homer guy, you know, but I had a hard time saying, well, you know, there was that. I couldn't find much there was that. Could you?
I mean, there were no injuries.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
That was the biggest positive.
You're right.
Is that they didn't lose three guys.
Yeah.
Because let this team start getting attrition.
Right.
And then see how scary this starts to look. So, at least they were healthy for the opener, and hopefully that will continue. The only other thing you could say is the punt team looked good, and that punting was great. Yeah. 48 yards, you'd take that 16 more times.
Yeah, I feel worse today, by the way.
Why is that?
I think because as I look around the league, it's not that anything on this team changed. It's that when I look around the league, nobody else feels as desperate as the Jaguars do right now. Nobody else feels quite at this level of embarrassment, even though I understand how the Packers did, but the Packers know they're a better team than that.
What you're saying is, I'm jumped in, I apologize, but what you're saying is last year we were clearly the worst team in the league. Does the possibility exist that they still are? That's what you're saying. That's your fear, isn't it?
Absolutely.
There's the possibility. The one thing we all said, I know I said, was I don't know if they're going to be one of the better teams, but their days of being the sucking's over, I think was the phrase they used. Their days of being one of the really bad teams is over. The fear is now, are they still going to be one of the really bad teams? I don't believe that yet. I'm not going to let myself believe that yet. It was one game. It's a long season. But I understand why same old would seep into the minds of people that have followed the Jaguars for a long time. You're not human if it didn't seep in there because it was so kind of, they were down 34-7 to a team that most people thought might be the worst team in the league. So when you're down 34-7 to a team some people think might be the worst team in the league, how could it not seep into your mind? How could it not seep? We're cursed. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're not human if some of that doesn't seep in there. So interesting stuff. When we come back, Greg McGarrity will join us in the Gator Bowl. We'll also talk a little college football. Have you found out yet about Anthony Richardson's hamstring? You had one assignment. What was? How is it?
He'll be fine.
Well, there you go. I asked and I got it. So that'd be good. By the way, that'd be good. Greg McGarrity joins us from the Gator Bowl after this. Hi, welcome back to the program. Tuesdays at 2:40 now. It was Thursdays. Tuesdays at 2:40. Our friend Greg McGarrity joins us, the executive director of the Gator Bowl. How you doing there, buddy?
Doing great, Frank.
Good to see you. Second week of college football. The Dogs played a little better offensively. Were you locked in for the Dogs? 4 o'clock afternoon start.
Yeah, Frank, it was the first time I had not been to a home game in Florida and Georgia in 43 years. So I had missed our road games last year due to COVID, but it really felt weird not to be in charge of something.
Yeah.
Other than, not even in charge of the house on Saturday. So it was a bit odd, but it was.
Yeah, you should have picked up the phone and tried to fire somebody or hire somebody, something, you know. What did you do? You sat back and watched.
Yeah, I just consumed college football and watched every game that I could as long as I was awake. And certainly it was a fun day.
Hey, how weird. I'm glad you said that. How weird is it for you to not be wherever the ADs sit? Because you've been wherever the ADs, I don't know where they sit, by the way. That's above my pay grade. But wherever the ADs sit, you've been in one of those booths for 40 years.
I know. That's what I was thinking about because usually on a 3:30 game, you get to the stadium at 8 or 9, and you'd meet a lot of people. You'd meet with the ushers, and you'd just be around and be present and you know, gripping and grinning and things like that. But, you know, heck, I didn't have that to worry about Saturday. So it was really awkward. Because, again, I'd missed some road games last year, and that was awkward enough. But to miss a home game was really a little bit different.
Greg, do you think from a Gator Bowl perspective, we're heading towards maybe the deepest SEC pool of candidates that you guys have had? When you look at Arkansas and what they were able to do against Texas, Ole Miss is obviously a very exciting program. And then you've got your four you've got Alabama, you've got LSU, you've got A&M, and you've got Auburn. It looks like the SEC West is just loaded.
Well, you made a great point. It's as strong as I've ever seen, probably 4 through 10 in quite some time. There's only maybe two teams that are kind of out of it, but you saw a Kentucky team that's got the transfer from Penn State. You know, they got a talented freshman receiver. They've got a great running back. You can't ignore them. You used to could maybe count on some wins, but what Sam did Saturday night in Fayetteville, he has that whole state motivated now. So I was really happy for Sam to
What's
see
he like? What's he?
Is he Sam is the best.
You knew him really well.
Absolutely.
Tell me about it. Tell me a Sam Pittman story.
Well, Sam is he always would host a Kentucky Derby party.
Okay.
And Kirby would usually let practice end a little early on that Saturday, but we would all go out to Sam's house, and downstairs he had kind of the guy's room down there where he had a jukebox, but he also had a wall that had all the college helmets that he had coached.
Okay.
And there were many. I mean, there might have been eight. Right. But he is in charge of that. I mean, there's betting on every races.
Love
I mean,
it.
He does a lot. Everybody dresses up, and he's the life of the party. And Jamie, his wife, was probably one of Cheryl's closest friends and still is. They still communicate.
Yeah.
Just jovial, a wonderful person, and he is so beloved at the University of Georgia. And, you know, Georgia won't be pulling for Sam when the Hogs come to Athens.
I know, a couple weeks.
But he'll want them to – I think everybody would love to see Sam win 11 games.
Yeah, I knew nothing about him until he got the Arkansas. I knew he was a good O-line coach. But I had no idea that he was this bigger-than-life personality and funny and lovable. I just knew he was good. I had no idea. Which one of the reasons he's such a good recruiter, by the way. But I had no idea.
Well, he was beloved there. He was with Jim Chaney.
Yeah.
They came together.
That's right. That's right.
As a package, as an OC and the line coach. But Sam was a magnetic personality. You know, he's a big man to begin with.
Yeah.
And the offensive lineman loved him because he was not a screamer and a holler. He was really a, you know, one of the guys in there. It's really hard on him. I think kids got to where they didn't want to disappoint him.
Yeah.
But he was a jovial person, a phenomenal recruiter, and certainly has done a great job in igniting that program. But, you know, you just never know. I mean, Sam had never been a coordinator before, but he'd be the first to tell you that he's hired a great staff. He gave the staff credit. I admire people that give their staff a lot of credit. And he gave his offensive and defensive coordinator big props throughout.
First thing he said when they interviewed, he said, well, Kendall had a great game plan. Talking about Kendall Browse, he really did.
No doubt.
Going back to Georgia, you follow it closer than we do. Did you think it would be Carson Beck starting in the game? Obviously, right before the game, an hour or so before we found out it would be Stetson Bennett. But did you think once JT Daniels had the oblique injury that it would be Carson?
You know, I didn't really know. I just know Stetson Bennett loves the University of Georgia. And as Kirby said many times, there's no one that's been more loyal to them. Stetson's a very calming force. I mean, he's, what, 5'10", 5'11"? But he has tremendous support from his teammates. I didn't get to really be around Carson much his freshman year because it was the COVID year and things along those lines. But I can just tell you that Stetson is one of these team players that everybody on the team loves to see him be successful. And I'm sure the same thing with Carson, or they certainly wouldn't be on campus.
No, I was thinking about this the other day too. No team that I can think of ever has had more quarterbacks that are that school's guy. Yeah, I mean, Georgia's had more Georgia guys play quarterback. They haven't all been good, but who was the guy from Waycross? Todd, somebody back in the day?
And Todd Wheeler? Todd Walker?
Todd Williams. Todd Williams. And Fromm was that guy. Yeah. Mike Bobo was that guy. Stetson's that guy. Joe, the redheaded guy, was
Joe
that?
Tereshinsky. Fran Tarkington.
Yeah, I mean, but they were but Georgia guys.
Where was Zaire from?
Georgia.
Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. He was a military brat, but he was most recently.
Wayne Johnson, James Jackson.
They were Georgia guys. I mean, those guys, they grew up in Georgia. Yeah. They were rooting for – Georgia's had more quarterbacks who were rooting for Georgia when they were five than any other school. You know, no one has that anymore.
And you look down the road, Vandegrift's a freshman there. They've got Clayton, Georgia, Gunnar Stockton.
Yeah.
It's already committed. So there's a pipeline there, but I think –
Buck and Lastinger were that guy, but I mean, you look around the country nowadays, how many teams have a quarterback who grew up rooting for that school? Now JT Daniels isn't that guy, but I mean, how many teams that doesn't happen anymore?
That's a great point, and I think it's just because there's no other really. I mean, you have Georgia Tech is the only other institution there at the Power Five level, but you know, the University of Georgia is the brand where these young people grow up wanting to play for the University of Georgia.
How many Florida guys, Tebow, Tebow, Tebow clearly was the guy that grew up rooting for the Gators.
Kerwin.
Brandon. Kerwin was in Mayo. He probably was FSU and Florida. He might have been FSU as much as Florida. But I'm trying to, how many guys at Florida grew up as Gator fans? Tebow was the classic case.
Brantley.
Yeah, Brantley for sure.
He wasn't, yeah, didn't have the but career he was hoping for.
But I'm trying to think, not many.
No.
Anthony Richardson's from Gainesville, right?
Anthony Richardson would be one. Yeah. He would be absolutely, he would definitely be one if he.
He's a new guy.
Yeah, but. That just doesn't happen much anymore.
It's just, and Florida has, you know, you've got FSU in Miami and now South Florida and Central Florida. Yeah. There's a lot of competition there, but you just don't have that in the state of Georgia.
Yeah. All right. Let me ask you. I'm going to make you the Florida AD for a second. Okay. you're the Florida AD. You and Scott are buddies. I know that. So you're the Florida AD for a second. Everybody in the world is telling your coach to bench his quarterback and play this new guy. Okay. You're the AD. I'm sure the AD and coach, you got to meet a couple times a week, right? You meet with your coach during the week, right?
Sure.
If you're the AD.
You don't want to get in the way. Accessible. Yeah.
You want to be, you're not telling him what to do. You want to be the ear. But are you telling him stick to what you know, or you don't listen to the noise? What do you tell a coach when he's hearing a bunch of noise as the AD?
You tell him you have faith in them to make those decisions, and you don't want to be a part of those decisions.
Right.
You want to stay out of that.
Right.
Certainly, because if you do assert yourself, then all of a sudden there's going to be pressure on a coach then to say, well, golly, I better do what the AD says. And I have always stayed away from that at any level, at any sport, to where, you know, coaches, you know, their jobs depend on the decisions that they make. But certainly you don't want it to be, well, you know, the AD told me to do this and be the reason that something fails, because these guys are out there grinding every day. They're watching tape. They evaluate every play in practice. And if certainly things in the practice field, if they don't transfer to the field that we don't see,
right?
You know, we don't really know that. So you either trust the coach or you don't. And if you don't trust them, you probably have to go in a different direction.
1993, A's. 1993, I had just gotten off the beat and gone into radio full time. I'd been on the beat for 4 years as a newspaper guy, and I'd gotten off the beat. And Jeremy and I were friends. I've known Jeremy since I was a student at Florida, and he had just gotten there as a ticket manager or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we go as far back as you can go. And Jeremy was instrumental in getting me on the broadcast team. And so I'm asking Jeremy the same question I asked Greg. I said, what about, because it was Dean Werfel. He goes, so Jeremy and I are just talking. I said, what do you think? He goes, well, you know what? He said, nobody's better picking than the ball coach. Nobody knows it better. I said, yeah, but he said, you know what? I could give you my opinions all day long. I said, the bottom line is the ball coach knows what he's doing. He's the ball coach. I'm not the ball coach. I said, but God dang it, what do you think? He goes, 7. And why? So I know what he thought. He plays 7.
Right.
So I remember that. So, but stays out of it. What do you think about the Florida situation? You've watched them a couple times. Now, what do you make of the Gators?
Well, I think they're always so talented. You know, the margin now of winning is so thin. I mean, like this weekend, you know, Florida has to play an error-free game, and I think they have to depend on Alabama to mess up a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, a little fumble here, or pick things, because Alabama will take advantage of every small mistake that you make. So you have to play a clean game. But I think everybody has a chance. If you ever think you've got this thing solved, last weekend was a great example of how you can never – figure this out and predict what's going to happen, because we saw some odd things happen that no one would ever dream would have happened with some games last weekend.
Certainly odd in Tallahassee. And we were talking a week ago about, you know, great performance against Notre Dame. Maybe they will be in the discussion, you know, maybe they'll get to that 7-8 win marker. Could still do it, but obviously now 0-2. What were your thoughts of Florida State's loss to Jacksonville State?
Well, I've seen it before to where you play down to your competition. And it's human nature. I mean, these young men are coming off seeing Jacksonville State lose to UAB, get shut out at home, and we all saw what Georgia did to UAB. But I'm just thinking human nature, if will probably tend someone to ease up. I'm sure the fans probably thought it was going to be a walk in the park. But that's what's so difficult about coaching, is getting young men that read about them, how great they played, and they're seeing a team come in that got shut out, and they might not have been listening to the coaches. And that's the toughest thing, is approaching every game with your best effort. And that is difficult to do because I say human nature kind of kicks in. FCS opponents, you haven't lost one forever. And all of a sudden they come in there and you don't execute and you make some mistakes and everything. Like I mentioned earlier, I mean, Kirby's first game against Nicholls State.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Georgia coughed it up a little bit. Nicholls State played a great game and almost won the game.
Right.
So you can never take anyone for granted now.
Certainly not. Besides Florida, Alabama, any other games have your eye this coming weekend?
Yeah, I'm interested to see Auburn go up to Happy Valley.
Yeah, yeah.
See how that game turns out. I think that's
one of the games of the weekend.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a game to really to lock into. There are not a lot of great marquee games this week, especially in the SEC. Yeah. But I think that's a game I'm really going to be interested in seeing.
Greg, final thing. What goes on now at your offices? Obviously, you're sending people out, but over the year, there's more than just preparing for a football game. Catch us up on what's going on with the Gator Bowl, like today, these days.
Well, we have a big corporate weekend this weekend where we pay tribute to all of our corporate sponsors out at Amelia. And we are still really working hard on corporate sponsorships, committee memberships, really selling tickets to our game because we want to do our heavy lifting before the teams are announced. Because you may get lucky and have a great, great game. On the other side, it may not be that great of a game, and you don't want to have to depend on the schools. The choices to determine your success is in ticket sales. So we're focused on that. We have a lot of committee meetings coming up, one in October, one in November. And so we're really focused on while working with the Jags on our game and things along those lines.
Greg McGarrity, Executive Director of the Gator Bowl. Have fun this. I know that's a fun weekend up there. Have fun this weekend.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We'll see you next week. Back in a moment. It's 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Always a Nimnik Tuesday here on the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, Hayes, Caroline, Andrew Gibson, and Lauren Brooks on our new Tuesday hours from 2 to 4. That means on Thursday we will be here back at our normal time from 3 to 6. Over the weekend, Frank, we lost a longtime Jacksonville proponent. That would be one Tommy Hazuri. I understand that he had been battling an illness, so it certainly wasn't necessarily unexpected for the family, but still, always that news is hard to hear.
Yeah, Tommy's a guy. I met Tommy in 1987. I was a sports writer covering I was in transition. And so and Tommy was the mayor. Rick Catlett was his kind of right-hand guy before Rick was in sports. Rick was kind of the right-hand guy of the mayor. And I met Tommy. I was a sports writer. I'd just gotten promoted from like between high schools and that small college thing. So I was sort of a general assignment guy. That did a little working for the Times Union full time, obviously, but sort of a general assignment guy. And that was talking. I don't know if you remember this or not, Hayes. You'd only been 10 years old or whatever. But that was when the Jags were going to get the Oilers. Do you remember the Oilers story?
Mm-hmm.
It was all talk that Bud Adams was moving Jacksonville was used as leverage a lot of times. Well, this was the time Houston used them. And there was also a strike that year. So the Oilers were going to come to Jacksonville. That was a big, big story. So the Times Union assigned Don Yeager, who was a city side reporter that went on to be the great author, but Don Yeager, the city side reporter, and Frank, the because everybody else had a beat to cover. So we were the two guys on the pursuit of the Jaguars. And so Don and I would meet. So Don already knew the mayor because he was right. He was the city affairs writer. Well, I didn't. But I knew some – we had mutual connections, family connections. So I got to know him, and I got to know him really well. I was a sports writer, and I would tell him, Tommy, I'm not a political guy. I'm not a government guy. That's Don. I'm just here covering the sports side of it because I think you're going to do okay. So we got talking a lot. I went to Houston. And then the strike broke out. I went to Houston to talk about how Oilers people felt about coming to Jacksonville. Well, then the strike hit. And so the Houston Oilers, do you remember Brent Pease, who was the coordinator under Muschamp? I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he was the Oilers' picket line quarterback, replacement quarterback. The real quarterback was Warren Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Warren Moon and Ernest Givens and all those guys couldn't practice at the facility because they were on strike. So they went to this park in Houston, and I went there and I interviewed them all and got to know them all. And Warren Moon said, yeah, we love Jacksonville. We heard it's great. We love Florida. We love the beach. So I write this story about how Warren Moon wants to come to Jacksonville. Well, all the players wanted to come to Jacksonville. So I cover the replacement game. It was Flutie for the Patriots versus Brent Pease for the Oilers. How about that, huh? I got that going for me. Okay, I had that game, okay? Other guys might have...
Hey, you got Flutie.
Other guys might have Brady and Ken Stabler. I had freaking Brent Pease and Flutie, okay? So
he
I had
won.
The good stuff. No idea. I don't remember. I covered the game. It's at the Astrodome. But I remember coming back and having read the story. Well, Tommy was so excited because I wrote a story that Warren Moon was all the rage then. Now he was one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew that Warren Moon wanted to come to Jacksonville, and Tommy said, "Thank you for writing that. Thank you for writing that." So I got to know Tommy, and we stayed friends throughout. And then Tommy was a politician for a long time. He was the mayor here. He was a city. He was a state representative before he was the mayor. Then he was the mayor here. Then later went on the city council, then later on the school board for many years, then back on the city council, and then most recently the city council president, and then he had his transplant right when he got named president of the city council. So had a tough go. He's a good man, and he loved Jacksonville. You talk about a man that cared about Jacksonville. Tommy Cesari was a really nice man who really, really cared about our city. A Democrat in a Republican stronghold, but a guy that really, really cared about the city. Really, really sad to see. When they brought in hospice a month or two ago, was it? You knew. But it really made me sad to think that we lost Tommy, who's a good man. By the way, Tommy moved. I didn't know all the background. Tommy moved here when there was this influx of Lebanese Americans who moved to Jackson. Did you read that story?
I did.
In the 50s. Well, my dad was one of them. I mean, there's this incredible influx of Lebanese Americans and Syrian Americans who moved to Jacksonville in the 50s. I mean, it's this huge, huge, huge influx. And my dad was among them. And that's one of the reasons my dad's best friend was Abdo Asker, who was Jerry Asker's dad, who started Jerry Sports Grill. And when they all moved here, my dad was this Lebanese man with this little Italian wife and living in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And they all, and him and the people in Massachusetts and the people in Michigan and some others in Pennsylvania, they all just up and moved to Jacksonville. They just thought Jacksonville was the next big thing. And so this influx of Lebanese Americans who came to Jacksonville included my dad. That's why I'm here. That's why you're stuck with me, Carline. Okay? So blame that.
Sounds good.
If you're looking for a reason to blame that.
Yeah.
Right. They were ahead of the curve. Because now Jacksonville's the destination city, but I don't know if it was back in the 50s. Yeah. I did read that Tommy Cesari was known for eradicating the toll roads in Jacksonville.
The tolls went away.
That was huge.
Yeah, it was huge. And under his watch, it's really because huge. The tolls were everywhere.
Yeah,
everywhere in the town. So, but sad to see the passing of Tommy Cesari, a nice man who truly, truly, truly cared about, our city. A lot of things to get to. USC. Who's the USC coach? You don't have to name a guy,
right.
but this is an elite position, right?
It is.
I don't think it's Urban. I don't think Urban came here to get a $100 million performance center built and then is going to leave.
Right.
So it's not Urban. But who is in play?
Yeah, well, first off, very well said on Tommy Cesari. I agree with everything he said. I think it's probably going to be Fickell. I think he's at Cincinnati. He's done a nice job there. If they continue to have a strong year, I think that's who it ends up being at USC.
Yeah, I almost mentioned him yesterday when we first found out the news, but we were on Jaguar stuff. I think he'd be a great candidate because, for people who don't know, he was at Ohio State and got the interim position at Ohio State and then eventually wasn't hired full-time by them. And that's when he went to Cincinnati and has done a great job with their program. And he seems to be a guy who, from what I have read, doesn't have any skeletons in the closet, so he'd be a guy that could be promoted to that big type of university. If you're him, of course you go. I mean, it's USC. When people bring up names like James Franklin at Penn State, I don't know that if I'm James Franklin and I feel like I have Penn State built to where I want it, which he may not feel that way, but if he does feel that way, if he feels like he's gotten really good inroads and the recruiting's going really well at Penn State, I don't know that you up and leave, go to the other side of the country, and you go to the Pac-12 when you're already in the Big Ten.
Matt Hayes knows all these guys. Matt's so connected in that world, and he thinks Franklin's by far the best candidate. I think Fickell, too. I think it's going to be Fickell. I think it's going to happen, and as soon as the season's over, Mike Bond, as you said, hired him. I think Fickell makes a lot of sense. I think Matt Campbell's a Midwestern guy. I don't sense PJ Fleck's big enough for SC. I think he would have been big enough for UCLA or Stanford. I don't know that he's big enough for SC. Now, maybe SC is not as big as I remember it. But
I don't know that the row the boat type of thing works at USC.
Yeah, it needs less. I think he's a good coach. I'm a big PJ Fleck fan. I'd take him in Florida tomorrow if the job came open. But there's less, you would think it's something with less shtick, wouldn't you? I read somewhere someone thinks that Mullen, did you see someone thought Mullen would be interested if they were interested in Mullen? I could see that. I don't think he would do that, but he's not Southern guy. he's not, you know what I mean? He's not Southern, born and reared on SEC football. And by the way, I don't think he's going to leave for SC. I don't want to misrepresent this. But I would be less shocked if he went than I would if Kirby Smart went.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be, you see my point? I mean,
sure.
I'd be less surprised if he went than if someone that you then I'd be less surprised than if Dabo went. You know,
right.
You could, yeah, because those guys are
Jimbo Fisher.
Correct. There, I'd be, yeah. Because he's, they're all Southern. They're all Southern football coaches. Dan's a very good football coach, but he's not Southern coach guy. At least to me, he's not.
And he may need the, I mean, again, Dan Mullen is, I mean, he's good on the field, but he's not good on the recruiting trail.
Yeah.
And you go to USC and there's far less resistance.
Way less.
In terms of that. So he'd probably have, be able, even with a mediocre recruiting ability, be able to build the best roster, or certainly one of them, in that conference. I didn't realize Fickell, I give him a lot of credit because I sort of thought Fickell just sort of arrived. But when you look at his record over the last, if, counting this season, which just got underway, I mean, he's 33-6 in his last 39 games at Cincinnati.
I didn't realize that.
That's
either.
Pretty good, sustainable
right.
success. He's gone 11-2. He was 4-8 his first year there in 2017. But since then, he's gone 11-2, 11-3, 9-1, and he's 2-0 this year.
And I'll tell you, I didn't know that. That's a great set. And let me say this, too. They played Georgia in that bowl game. And Georgia's legit now. Georgia is one of the five that belong. Everybody else is just chasing those five. Georgia is as legit as it comes. They have a great roster. I think Kirby Smart's a way better coach than people give him credit for sometimes. So I'm a big proponent and believer in what Georgia's done. They went toe to toe now. That was toe to toe back and forth. So he built Cincinnati and put them on the big screen, if you will. So. It'll be interesting to see the way the whole thing plays out. We're going to talk more about this coming up. Denny's going to join us in a few minutes. We're going to talk about, Carson Beck and Anthony Richardson and some of his guys and where he thinks that thing plays out. We'll talk more as the week goes on about what Florida does. The State Farm College Football Report, by the way, now is Wednesday, not Tuesday. So we apologize. We hope you get your – we'll continue to update you on the schedule, what we're going to be doing. But one topic I want to get to, if not today, this week. What about the Canes? We're going to talk a great deal about the Seminoles, and is it another tough year for them, and does Florida have a chance against Alabama? If the Hurricanes lose to Michigan State at home on Saturday, is that almost a game that signals it now can't happen there? It's been a long time. You've heard me say, and I'm on record, I don't think they'll ever be what they were again. I mean, I think that is a real watershed game for them. I know they've got the whole conference schedule ahead of them, and they won't have even played a conference game. I get it. But I find that to be a watershed game. Do you see it that way?
I see it that way because if they lose to Michigan State, no one's going to talk about Miami for the rest of the year.
You said it way more succinctly than I did. That's the deal, right?
Yeah. So you're basically –
I mean, they could run the table in the league.
Yeah, your program's back in hibernation. The only thing that would dig them out is you know, And again, it's almost laughable to suggest they could start 1-2 and then all of a sudden roll off, you know, an undefeated conference slate, even in a bad ACC. But that's the thing. Like, they don't really get – I mean, maybe if they ran the table and you beat Virginia Tech November 20th, then people start talking. But it just – it puts you your program in ice for 2 months.
What about a Lauren referendum game for the Canes this week?
If you're a Miami fan, yes. I think from the outside looking in, you don't really even care if Miami wins or loses. I don't think that.
Well, that means it.
I don't think they're a factor whatsoever. I think the moment that they were down 27-0 in the first quarter at Alabama, that told you all you needed to know about their season.
Interesting stuff. We'll take a break.
Should have had them, by the way.
Absolutely.
And by the way,
catch the ball.
Yeah. And Gibby, and don't take this wrong, Gibby, because App State's got a terrific team. But I agree with Gibby. I think App State should have beat them. If you know App State's going to play you close and App State almost beats you, and there's no disrespect to App State, but then you're not going to be elite because App State – I think, by the way, App State might could hang around with Florida.
Sure.
But I don't think they could hang around with Alabama or Georgia or those guys. So I wonder – I just do. I think this is a really big game for the Canes. I think it's a really, really gigantic game for the University of Miami.
Yeah, they are 6.5-point favorites, so they're expected to win the game. If they can stop Kenneth Walker, he's the big-time running threat for Michigan State, then I think they can easily win the game. It's just, I think De'Aaron King is underwhelming, and that's their season's going to go as he goes.
A little frenetic. He's very athletic because he's so short. He has a tough time finding passing lanes, so he's going to kind of they got to move him around a little bit. Interesting stuff. Let's take a break. Danny Thompson, speaking of quarterbacks, knows it better than anybody. He'll join us after this on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, the quarterback whisperer, Danny Thompson.
Okay, bring it in.
Hey, you got any questions for Danny that how you want him to go about this?
Yeah, as long as he whispers every answer, I'll be satisfied. I feel bad for Danny because he does such a great job. He's on so many shows, and every time he has to give the disclaimer, this was not my idea, and I laugh every time he does it.
I do not walk around calling myself the quarterback whisperer.
That's funny because all we do is now call you that.
I know.
The word on the street was you filed for a legal name change. That's not true.
It's not. Okay, no. It's 6 points is now going to Whispering Academy.
While you're in here, your SUV's getting wrapped.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
It's a very fast job that's being done.
The back of it's just a hand going shh.
Oh. All right, where do we start? We got all kind of stuff with you. Got one segment to get it in, so I'm going to go fast. I was surprised Carson Beck didn't start. I know how close you are to Carson. JT Daniels wasn't able to play. They played Stetson Bennett instead. Were you surprised? You must not have been that surprised because you didn't go. But we were really expecting to – and I was excited, very excited. I mean, I was in Houston. They had ESPN2 in Houston. The Gator game was just ending. I was very excited about the chance to watch that. I was really disappointed. And I know,
I was disappointed.
Chris, I know the family. Yeah. So what about you?
I was disappointed. I was surprised whenever I got the information, which was, Friday. I guess it was Friday. I thought he was going to be the guy. And I just used a little bit of deductive reasoning of he was the backup quarterback and the starter went down. Usually that would mean your number two starts. That was kind of my reasoning. So, yeah, I was a little surprised and very disappointed that he didn't get the nod on Saturday.
How did you think he played once he went in, though? 88 yards, one touchdown, one
pick. Okay. He played okay. I think he played like somebody who's getting his first real action. And I think that, at the end of the day, we're going to talk about development in a second when we talk about Anthony Richardson. But development is hard if you're not in the game, right? And if you're not put into pressure situations. And I just would like – this is me being greedy because he's one of my guys. I'd just like to see him have to take control of a whole game because you don't know where you stand until you have to do that. And so, this first series in, he handed off three times, out. Sat two or three series. First throw was like a deep post. And I'm like, man, dang, we couldn't give him like a speed out to start? And I'm not trying to blame the coaches. He should have hit it, and he didn't. There's some throws he'd like to have back, I know, but all in all, not bad for somebody getting his first game action.
What should Dan Mullen do at quarterback?
Play Anthony Richardson. I think that's – I shouldn't say it this way. I will. I think it's obvious. I think it's obvious now that one guy is on a whole different level than the other guy, regardless of what the other guy's level is, good, bad, indifferent, whatever it is. 15 is just on a different level. He's in most games, he's going to be the best player on the field, period. That doesn't mean you're going to beat Alabama, who's got numbers 2 through 31 on the best player on the field. But Anthony Richardson's the best player on the field. So I don't know how you don't just roll with him.
Yeah, I had a long – I won't bore listeners again, but I had a long reason, long explanation yesterday why I think he hasn't made that decision yet, and I think part of his loyalty to his guy that's been there 4 years and on and on. But yeah, it's time now at some point for us all to see what, to your point a minute ago about Carson Beck, what Anthony Richardson can do if he plays the whole game. Two things. Number one, I saw you working with Lauren on this for one of the Lauren's Lane, but how long did it take you to teach him to do that somersault in the air? I've seen you do it, okay? And I know that's a 6 points thing.
Do you know the first time I ever met him, he did that?
Did he really?
Yeah. Yeah. I was driving up. It was a park in Gainesville.
Yeah.
And I think it was a freshman or sophomore year. Yeah. And we had never met, and I was walking up, and he's with a buddy of his just doing that. And I'm like, what in the world?
What are you doing?
Like, what is he doing? But real quick on the Dan Mullen thing, Frank, he said something that I appreciate. He talked about a play that I watched 12 times where Anthony missed his first read, missed the check down, and then he took off and scrambled.
Right.
If First read was open. Check down was open. Anthony ran. That is development, right? That is a part of development. I'm glad and I appreciate Dan Mullen for pointing that out and for saying to Anthony, look, you're great, but you're not anywhere near where you can be. Like, I actually really respect Dan Mullen for that. Another part of development, though, is if you see a kid that's uber talented and he's having that issue, then you go away from that play when he's in.
Well, the other thing, too, I think, Danny, I think the other – and the point I made was that he can't bail on Emory now because Emory's been loyal and Emory didn't transfer to Memphis or Tulane. He stayed the course, and it's only been two games. In my opinion, I think that's why he's done it. The problem is Emory looks like he might not have that knack. He's now not seeing defensive backs he should see too many times. Back to Anthony for a second. I made this point yesterday, too. Here's essentially what Mullen's saying. Mullen said he missed a protection check, and then he missed a check down. Well – And again, the way coaches tend to think, Danny, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, okay, if – I tried to describe it as best I could, but we're not football guys. But if the three technique takes a step to the right, then you're supposed to check to a slide protection. So he doesn't check to the slide protection, and for that reason, the defensive lineman gets on him, okay? Mm-hmm. That happens. Because he's Superman,
right?
He spins away from the guy, and then as he's supposed to check down, but he didn't see that either, so he runs for 80 yards – I do, in fairness to Anthony, and to fairness to the point that you guys are all making, at some point a coach has got to say, okay, I might have to win with the guy who misses the check down but is good enough to run the 80 yards, so I may have to coach a little differently. Isn't that part of this too?
Or yeah, it's exactly – that's the whole thing. I have to live with that, and then let me coach him up Monday through Thursday.
Yeah.
But let me let him play his game on Saturday because I don't want to slow him down. I'm going to take away from his greatness. So Monday through Thursday, let's work on these things, Anthony. And then on Saturday, you get out there and you do your thing, man. And that's going to work. By the way, that throw that he made.
Yeah, I think it was that great a throw. He's rolling to his left. He's about to step. He's getting hit, about to step out of bounds while rolling to his left, and throws a dime about 58 yards downfield right in stride. You thought it was a good throw?
I think the over-under on number of times that I made my wife watch that throw is probably about 60.
Can you tell us about his hamstring?
I can't.
Okay. Do you know?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
How many times have you been asked that question since he pulled up Saturday during the game?
Yeah, I didn't know I had that many people that, that I was we were on that personal level that you could DM me.
There's guys like me. I don't even like Denny all that much, but I'm Denny. What about the hammy?
I legit thought about texting you, and I was like, but the answer's going to be I'm not going to tell you.
The DMs, as the young kids say, were lit.
Yes, of course. All right, so let's switch it to 1-6 on Sunday. He did throw three interceptions, but what did you see overall of Trevor Lawrence?
I mean, I thought he played pretty well. The two of the interceptions were really odd and uncharacteristic. Those are things he's seen before, so that's a little concerning. So I think he was probably just pressing on those a little bit. But, I know the disappointment. I was disappointed as well. But the thing that you got to come out of this year and be able to say as a Jag fan is that 16 is generational. And he's got to show you just enough every single week where you go, man, we haven't seen that before. And you saw that, didn't you? You saw three, four throws that I'm not sure has ever happened in a Jag uniform before. And so I think, not trying to be glass half full guy, but just enjoy that part of it. The rest of the team, it's a mess. Coaching was a mess. But 16's fine.
What do you do in Tallahassee at the quarterback position?
Pray. I mean, you got to play Jordan. And for the same reasons that we said before, Notre Dame, they're not good. They're not good up front. And part of your offense is going to be your quarterback having to get out of situations and issues. Hmm. And McKenzie can't do that. So if you're going to generate offense, unfortunately, it's not going to be from a clean pocket throwing 15-yard outs. And that's what McKenzie does, or that's what he has to do. You're going to need a guy who's going to make some stuff happen. And he may not be as good throwing the ball, but that's going to be, unfortunately, a part of your offense.
It's interesting because Ballou and I were talking about it. McKenzie Milton looked so good that little bit against Notre Dame. His arm didn't look strong last week. I don't know what I was expecting. So, hey, one more thing before I let you go. Back to Trevor for a second. Tell me this because you'll know this if we don't know it, because I've been thinking about this. So, We watched all the camp practices. I was at virtually every camp practice. We all were. Called every game that he's played here. Called every pass he's thrown here. On Sunday, Denny, being at that game, dude, those were howitzers.
Yes.
Those were – so, and I thought one of the reasons there were six drops is they had trouble handling the velocity. Just, again, that's my naked eye, untrained like yours is trained, to watch. I mean, I'm just telling you, being at the game – Those things had more juice than the to me the preseason games did. So question for you: can a quarterback get so amped up that there's more velocity? I know baseball pitchers can.
Yeah.
That there's more velocity, and could that have been why there's some of those drops? Because those are fastballs, man. Does it happen that way?
Yeah, and I think the placement on a lot of those balls weren't ideal.
A little behind them.
But I think that's why. I think you're onto something there. Is when you start doing anything faster than you're used to doing it, it's going to throw off the timing of everything,
yeah.
Right? So if you normally are throwing the ball at 80%, which is probably about the range you should be at as a quarterback, if you're throwing at 100%, you probably shouldn't have thrown the ball.
Okay.
But at 80%, you know, everything should be synced up. Everything should come through in the right order, all that kind of stuff. Well, if all of a sudden you speed your arm up to 100%, your body doesn't match, you're going to be off just a tad. And so I think a lot of those balls that you saw, you know, maybe his hip didn't get through at the same time. Maybe the way his everything synced up just wasn't in order, the sequencing of it. I don't know. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But I saw the same thing you did. I saw a ball, especially on the deeper balls. Those balls were coming out of his hands. And the touchdown pass, I immediately tweeted out, oh, my gosh.
The one to
Chark? That's a missile.
The one to Chark was a missile.
And then what was it? 50 in the air?
And it never got 12 feet high.
No.
I mean, it was an absolute – and that's what I wondered. It looked to me – again, I've been in the broadcast booth for three games. The height of all three broadcast booths are somewhat similar. Ours is a little lower than the other two. I mean, I had the same view. Ooh, boy.
Sequencing is so big for quarterbacks, though. It is so big. I think we're going to see a much different offense this week than we saw last week. I think that first game getting out of the way is huge for Trevor.
Hayes, Hayes was also at the game in the press box. Did it look that way to you too, that the ball was faster?
They were missiles.
They were with.
But you still have to catch them.
Yeah, no, I'm not exonerating someone dropping a pass. I'm just saying they were lasers, man.
Hayes, they got paid this week. Yeah, they were supposed to catch them.
But they didn't drop them like that in the preseason is my point.
Well, I know we got to go, but one other thing, if you remember the Monday practice where he had the interceptions. That's the one concern I have right now is we went through all the camp. Between all of us, we were at every practice. I don't think I saw him throw more than one interception except for that one day.
I agree.
And then you see a day where he throws three picks. I just hope he's not an interception and bunches type of guy, even if it is once in a blue moon. That's a little bit of a concern for me right now.
Yeah, quick as we go, 30 seconds. Don't almost every NFL quarterback, I know the years I've covered this and called this, throw fewer interceptions as the years go on. You just know what to look for. Doesn't that happen?
Yeah, your peak in the NFL as a quarterback starts at year seven.
Certainly in terms of vision, right?
Yeah, vision, how you see the game, how you control the game, how you set protections.
Totally believe that.
Year 7 to 12 should be your peak.
Danny, great work as always, brother. We appreciate that. We'll take a break. One segment to go on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Real quick before we get it back to college football. Hayes, did you see Evan McPherson's day for the Bengals?
Yeah, I'm happy for Evan. That was fantastic.
No, you're
I am
not.
Happy
you're
for
mad
Evan.
At him.
I mean, now, I mean, it's.
You're going to yell at him in Cincinnati, aren't you? You're going to go on the field and yell at him.
I wish him well.
You're going to heckle him.
I just find it funny that, you know, the University of Florida is the only program in the nation that would have a kicker leave early. Yeah. But, that's great. He hit a game winner, and he's doing great in Cincinnati. Hopefully it'll continue.
Evan McPherson could be 38 out of 38 this year.
Yep.
Go to the Pro Bowl.
Yep.
Win the MVP of the Super Bowl. And Hayes will still think he made a bad decision. How do you come out early if you're a kicker?
Well, I know. I'm wrong. I mean, he obviously is doing great right now. We'll see if it continues. Right. I mean, what if he goes three of his next seven? Then we'll see, how things are going in Cincinnati. But so far, it appears like Evan McPherson absolutely made the right decision.
It was still radio gold.
I still can't believe
kickers
he left early.
Don't come out early. Yeah. You can't come out early if you're a
Georgia's
kicker.
Georgia's entire team goes back to school. Florida loses its kicker early.
Georgia even had guys come back, didn't they? I think Herschel went back.
Right.
So. Oh,
but yeah, I saw that obviously he made the game winner. We didn't have time for it yesterday. I was like, I've got to ask Hayes about Evan.
So we'll talk a lot about Florida, Alabama, a great deal tomorrow. That's obviously a gigantic game in college football this week. And will Anthony Richardson be available? I'll tell you what I told you yesterday. They're never going to tell you. That Dan Mullen's going to make sure nobody knows if Anthony Richardson's healthy or not. And so we'll talk more about that as the week goes on.
Do you feel like... all right, here's how I feel. He might have a chance to play just based off of his tweet. Like, you don't tweet about your hamstring if you're definitely sitting this week, is my gut feeling.
I told Hicken on the podcast. We did the podcast yesterday, or today. We did the podcast this morning. I told Hicken, goes, I wouldn't be surprised if he plays. Also, wouldn't be surprised if he's in street clothes. I would be surprised if he's in street clothes, okay? I think he's going to be in uniform. I would not be surprised if he's too hurt to play very much. I mean, he grabbed that thing. I don't know a lot about it. My buddy Randy, who's a really good track guy and decathlete and still trains like that and is still in phenomenal shape, he gave me a little bit of hope because he said that you rarely hurt it badly. I hope I understand. I'm putting words in his mouth. You rarely hurt it badly when you're decelerating. And it was the end of the run. He said you usually hurt it worse when you're accelerating. He also said that if he tore it, it would have been like he would be down on the ground. Hicken said, Daniel Murphy said, it didn't look like he was shot because you look like you're shot when you tear it. So my guess is he comes back sooner than a bad injury, but it would not surprise me. Yeah, so to your question, I don't know what to expect, but it would not surprise me. I can tell you this, after watching that injury and watching him grab it, and then Scott Carter wrote on FloridaGators.com that he was the last guy off the field and he was the last guy to the bus because he was walking so gingerly. Shame on you if you're surprised if he doesn't play. You know, I mean, that common sense tells you there's a chance he's still going to be hurt. Maybe not, but you never know. So we'll see. So we'll talk more about that game coming up. It's a big, big game. And I'll get to the Noles tomorrow too. But I'm starting this thing about Miami. This was supposed to be the year. They get their six-year quarterback back. Everybody knew they weren't going to beat Alabama, but you thought they'd hang around. You thought they'd beat App State, but you thought App State would hang around. But neither of those went as Miami favor as I thought they would. I thought they'd play Alabama a little closer. They didn't. Alabama could name the score. I thought App State would hang around, but then Miami would win by 10 at the end. I thought by the end of the game, Miami would win 34-24. And App State would have had three and a half good quarters, but at the end there was no doubt. Truth is that App State probably should have won the game. I mean, again, Gibby and
absolutely.
I talked about this. The number 11 guy makes the catch.
Jalen Virgil.
Yeah, they probably win the game.
Well, it was a safety that cost them the game too.
Yeah, well, that's true too. But the point is they weren't appreciably better than App State, and they were nowhere near as good as Alabama.
If it was a seven-game series, I'm not sure I wouldn't pick App State in seven.
So they were right with them.
The numbers, team numbers, go look at them. They're nearly identical. Yeah.
And in the Alabama game, there was a bigger gulf between Alabama and Miami than I expected to be. So if you
that
add
one
up,
I think would be a sweep.
Yeah, me too. But my point is, if you add up those two games, in neither game was Miami as good as I thought they would be. That's my point. In neither game were they as good as I thought they'd be. And if it's not this year... I just don't. I mean, this almost kind of had to be the year. Even Manny Diaz, when he was interviewed afterwards, Hayes, he looked tepid. Did you see the post game right after the game?
Mm-hmm.
He looked very, very tepid, almost like he knew. Did you get that? I got that sense anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that if Miami goes and wins Saturday, and I think you're dead on with it being a crossroads game for the program in terms of you got to hold serve at home against Michigan State, who does have a nice win on its belt in terms of beating Northwestern in the opener. But if you can beat Sparty, then you get a cupcake, then you host Virginia, you go on the road to North Carolina, who, you know, is not as good as they've been billed, NC State. I mean, I think Miami can get hot if they beat Michigan State. I still think they can get to 9 or 10 wins and, you know, win that division, and I'm sure Clemson will, you know, handle them in the ACC title game. But that's why I think Saturday is so important for Miami, because if you lose, then no one's going to really care. You could win your next five, and I don't think anybody around the nation is going to be paying much attention to what you're doing. They'll be out of the poll. They're 24th now. So if they lose Saturday at home, it's going to be a while before they get back in. That's why I think it's big. If they can win Saturday and get some momentum going, then I think they can have the year that they anticipate. And frankly, I think you would say, okay, after three games, we figured we'd be 2-1 with the loss being Alabama, and now you just go and you try and win the Coastal. So, if they lose the game, I think it's pretty devastating.
Yeah, if they lose the game, I think then you're looking at absolutely Miami losing to teams like Virginia, North Carolina, Pitt, even NC State.
Everything the four teams you just ran off are all pretty good.
Right.
Virginia's pretty
good.
You're
not going to have any confidence just after going 1-2 and then beating Central, whatever that is, Central Connecticut State or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, if I look at the Coastal, Lauren, Virginia Tech was clearly better.
Right.
Virginia, I watched Virginia because I told you I watched the Illinois games. They're pretty good. North Carolina, they may be overrated, but if Miami's off, they're not going to win that one. So we'll wind up seeing. Anyway, so,
and Pitt obviously beat Tennessee.
All right, we got a lot to talk. Tomorrow we'll talk certainly way more Florida-Alabama. That'll be a key part of the program. And the Denver Broncos come calling. What to expect from the Jaguars after not such a good performance last week. We'll get to that. We'll get a little bit to Florida State as well. Every Tuesday now we'll be here 2-4. And then we'll turn it over to our friends from Jaguars Happy Hour. And that, of course, includes the Urban Meyer Show, which is coming up on Jaguars Radio as well. That'll do it for us tomorrow. Same bad time. Tomorrow back to 3 o'clock. 3 to 6 tomorrow, our normal time on the program. The State Farm College Football Report, by the way, will be tomorrow. Messrs. Dooley, Block, and Zagacki. We're out of here. For Hayes, Lauren, and Gibby, I'm Frank Frangie. Have a great night.